we're in a lot of trouble. Because you people and 62 million other Americans are listening to me right now. Because less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Because the only truth you know is what you get over this tube. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube is the gospel, the ultimate revelation. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. This tube is the most awesome goddamn force in the whole godless world. And woe is us if it ever falls into the hands of the wrong people. And when the 12th largest company in the world controls the most awesome goddamn propaganda force in the whole godless world, who knows what shit will be peddled for truth on this network. So you listen to me. Listen to me. Television is not the truth. Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. But man, you're never going to get any truth from us. We'll tell you anything you want to hear. We lie like hell. We'll tell you that Kojak always gets the killer and that nobody ever gets cancer in Archie Bunker's house. And no matter how much trouble the hero is in, don't worry, just look at your watch. At the end of the hour, he's going to win. We'll tell you any shit you want to hear. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds. We're all you know. You're beginning to believe the illusions we're spinning here. You're beginning to think that the tube is reality and that your own lives are unreal. You do whatever the tube tells you. You dress like the tube. You eat like the tube. You raise your children like the tube. You even think like the tube. This is mass madness, you maniacs. In God's name, you people are the real thing. We are the illusion. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of the sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school. Dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Monday, April 30th, 2007. And you are listening to Newsreel, the WOG global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rand Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are as well. And you can follow up with all these news stories by Check My Facts, which you should do with everybody's facts. Everything that comes out of the God Box is a lie, including this particular God Box, so make sure you check some everything. And you can do that by going to my live journal, and you can get there by going to Sean, S-E-A-N, underscore Kennedy, like the dead guy, .livejournal.com. This is a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, 76 Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, where the rock is always pure, otherwise it's not pure rock, and it would just be kind of like a gravel. Osprey Radio, what all the birds listen to, Extreme Radio Tampa, Jeeper One Radio, big with the Dodge crowd, and Risk Radio, where it's always risque. I've got a little bit of feedback there. You know, that intro that I put on there, that's from sent in by Machine Screw, and it was from a film called Network, and it was a bit of a compilation. They messed around with it a bit and put the music in the background, but I ripped the audio from that, and I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was a pretty cool thing, so we put that on the beginning. Pretty poignant, you know? Pretty poignant. How many books do you read? Do you read? Do you make time to read? You should. You should. I should. I don't nearly read as much as I should, and I really should read a lot. That's really the sad part, you know, is that it's hard. It's hard today to get the time to read, you know. It's hard to, like, actually get a hold of books and start trying to, like, stimulate the mind. That's why sometimes I like a lot of media from other countries. That's why I'm a big fan of, like, recently I've been a bit of a transhumanist kick, but that's probably because I'm doing some writing and stuff like that and related to science fiction and that. So, you know, that's kind of the direction I've been reading lately. Kind of interesting stuff. But you should always find something that you're interested in and read on that subject, even if it's fiction, nonfiction, even if you read about, I don't know, dead languages, whatever. The only good language is a dead language, you know? I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that you can read about and just, for God's sakes, read. Okay, enough of that. Speaking of reading, oh my God, the whole internet called me up and told me about Audacity. That's the last time I put a call out like that. No, it won't be the last time. You know that, because... you know, the internet's like my own personal sentient search engine, and I'll just, you know, call it out on the show, and then the whole freaking world responds and telling me about Linux Audacity. Audacity is an audio program to be used with Linux, which, as I'm starting to wire back up these days, you know, I'm going to try to hook myself back into the machine really fully. And those of you who think, well, what do you mean you're trying to hook yourself back fully into the internet, Sean? I mean, you know, you're pretty online now, you do the show, you're kind of on the edge here, you got people sending you stories, you're pretty well informed. No. For those of you who stuck around back in the day, for those who were around 2001, 2002 mark when I was doing, you know, 6-8 hours, I did more internet time before 6 a.m. than most people do all day. I used to be a real webhead right on the bleeding edge. And now, you know, thanks to Moore's Law, the technology has increased. I've been offline. Well, not really, you know, feral about it. I haven't been completely, you know, Stevenson Gargoyle about the whole thing. But, you know, it's starting to be entertaining. I'm looking at there's a new motherboard. Just came out of Taiwan, the size of a credit card. Everything's on board. I mean, you don't got power on board or nothing like that, but you can build yourself little... basically, in an old Sony Walkman case, you could put an entire wearable computer, throw it inside of like a, well, I don't know, some bag, VersiPack or whatever, and away you go. You're good to go. You know, there's all kinds of crazy tech going on. There's a website called Tech Gear in Canada, and they make a night vision thing that's right out of Ghost in the Shell. I mean, you got to see this thing. You can toggle between screen and video feed and night vision equipment. It's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. And all these head-mounted displays, because that's what's really stopping the wearable, you know, thing from happening is the displays. But now the displays are getting small enough. The displays are getting small enough. Input's getting small enough. You still walk around looking like you've got, you know, half the monitor strapped to your head. But it's starting to get, you know, so the chicks will look at you if you got one of these things on. And that's what's really all about. We got to get some stylish people. We got to get some people who have some idea about style involved with the internet. That's what we do. So we can get some, like, pretty hot and tempting, you know, wearable designs going on. Now, the IBM did one. You remember that commercial? Anybody ever see that commercial with the IBM guy in Russia? He was yelling and screaming about birds and stuff like that, and he was running around, and then that thing probably died. That died because nobody wants to actually build a wearable. What they want to do is they want you to hook into your phone, and then they'll charge you for every single letter of text that you read. You know what I mean? So this is why it's important that, you know, we learn a little bit more about Wi-Fi and doing all that kind of stuff so that we can use Skype and we don't have to pay in order to learn. You know, this would be a good reason to learn about that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's just me. Lots of neat stuff going on with the tech world these days, and that's why the show carries on. But first, let's get back to some feedback, shall we? Dear Sean, heard you give your explanation of Schrodinger's Law. I'm probably spelling it Schrodinger's Law. I have to agree with you. The notion of the cat being both dead and alive is wrong. Now, the Schrodinger's Law is this law that, you know, you put a cat in a box. If you don't know if the cat is dead or alive, I talk about this on the show. It's a quantum physics thing. And therefore, Schrodinger's Law dictates that it was both alive and dead at the same time. And I thought that was ridiculous. The cat is either dead or alive. We can't just know which state it is without influencing the income. When the box is closed, the cat is either dead or alive. If the box is open, the cat will most certainly be dead. The idea behind quantum physics, as I understand it, this is from the writer of this email, is we can't know for certain the state of a quantum particle without observing it, yet the act of observing it changes it. Now, we're getting into the really, you know, Michael Akaku math hair kind of stuff with this. This is one of the main reasons the concept of the Star Trek transporter can't really work. Oh, danger, man. I don't know. I don't like saying stuff like that because, you know, it's been my experience that as you learn about this stuff, the stuff that people say is impossible winds up getting invented on you. But anyway, it goes on to say here, we can't know where all the particles in an object are at a given moment, so we could generate the pattern that will produce you on the other end. In other words, bucket monkeys for everybody. Bucket monkeys are those sad little monkeys that tried to make it through the transporter and come out looking like coleslaw. Better wait until that one gets out of beta, definitely. Yeah, no doubt, dude. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to wait for that to be way out of beta. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be waiting for the firmware upgrade to be like version 6 before I touch that. On a totally different subject, I turn 36 next Tuesday, and I don't need a digital baptism because I'm still enjoying the name you gave me on your old show. However, if there just happens to be a copy of the Bloodstained Rabbit, oh, there's the payoff. He's fishing. I just kind of lying around somewhere, and you won't mind parting with it. Yeah, it would be kind of cool. Anyways, I love the show. Keep doing what you do. Alamode. Well, I'm sorry, but there were no Bloodstained Rabbits books left. I have one left. It's mine. It's sitting on the shelf. That's it. Screw you, hippie. And it was the original one that came with the book, and Sim has told me that if I give it away, I'll be shot. Okay, he's and when vegans threaten violence, you know it's bad. You know it's bad when the vegans threaten violence. But the truth is, the Bloodstained Rabbit was a 250-run copy of a sad, pathetic little book that I wrote. And some people seem to like it. The grammar and the spelling in it is atrocious. I can barely even stand to look at the thing. And as God is my witness, I will not produce another one. Thank you. There are 250 of those made. Who's ever got them has got them. And I think it'd be kind of sad to actually reproduce them because, well, it kind of undermines the value of the ones that are already out there. You know what I mean? Like, those people, you know, they bought them. I told them when I put it out that I'm not going to do it again. I'm not reprinting it. So I wouldn't want to go back on my word. So sorry about that. The Bloodstained Rabbit, you can download it for free and you can read it and stuff, but the book, so we're not going to do that anymore. So sorry. However, big news, the new book, The Scabbed Wings of Abaddon, is available now. And if you hit on the LiveJournal site, you can pick that up. It's kind of neat. ISBN number 978-1-4303-16206. That's the ISBN number for anybody who wants to read Scabbed Wings of Abaddon, which is my new book. Well, not the new book. It took me about 7 years to write. It's probably the greatest thing I've ever done. If I would say, well, you know, Tales from the Afternoon is pretty close, but Tales from the Afternoon didn't take me 7 years to do, you know, whereas, you know, The Scabbed Wings of Abaddon did. So if you got nothing better to do and you're into some good horror, it's a story about a woman's journeys through the lands of the dead. I would classify it probably as hard occult fiction, or, well, you know, that's dangerous too because it was like hard science fiction. Hard science fiction, for those of you who, you know, have a life and stuff, hard sci-fi, science fiction that applies to actual laws of physics. So the idea of having hard occult, of course, because occult stuff is all supernaturally based, so therefore there's no real hard science in there, could be argued. I would say that I tried to, you know, work stuff in line with the occult theory that I know and all that kind of jazz. So if you're into that sort of thing, and, you know, you want to get all Halloween-y and read a nice good horror novel that's really freaky, then, you know, pick it up. More quantum feedback. Hey, Sean, I wanted to clear up a little misconception you seem to have about quantum computers. Well, there's more than a little misconception I have with quantum computers. I'm not one of these guys who like to pretend like they're the smartest dude in the world. As a matter of fact, it's not like I'm proud of being stupid, because there's like the crowd that's into that too. I don't know anything about computers. I can barely turn them. Everybody knows something like that. Yep, I hate computers. Well, okay, you can be that way. Master the technology or you will be mastered by it, you know, but, you know, it's pretty interesting stuff, this quantum computing, you know, things that eat cryptography, stuff like this. But the email sender guy, he goes on to say, quantum computers do not use light for their computation. Oh, they use a unit called a qubit. That's the little dude who jumps up and down the staggered stair grid thing. No, that's qubit. Sorry. They basically used a stabilized quantum particle and used its quantum properties to interpret data. Oh, well, that's what I meant. What you may be thinking of is some optical-based computers using mechanisms similar to quantum mechanics like electromagnetic wave superposition, but quantum mechanical systems have some properties specific to them, such as entanglement. The thing is, at this point, quantum system is extremely hard to manipulate, especially due to the decoherence quantum computing not quite viable yet. Yeah, we're working on that. We're working on that. Leon's been working on the decoherence quantum computing you know, variables. We've been trying to sort that out, but it just hasn't come to pass, you know? And, you know, the dog, he's had some ideas on it, but, you know, as of right now, I'm right there with you, man. I concur, you know, completely. Due to light's easier to manipulate properties, they've actually had light-based chips running at quantum or near quantum speeds. So we basically have this technology already. Well, yeah, who doesn't know that? Anyway, quantum computers have more potential for speed, but they are beyond our reach for now, so we'll probably use the quantum-esque light computers to figure out how to make quantum computers. And that was from Ectos, who I guess Ectos is, you know, pretty much into this kind of stuff. Some guys get really off on the whole quantum stuff. I kind of glass over pretty early on. You know, that look that people get in their eyes when you try to explain to them stuff about their computer or various tech things or anime or whatever, and they just kind of glass over, and you're like, oh, there they go. There they go. You know, you lose them. That's kind of me with the whole, you know, advanced math thing. No, I'm. It's kind of like trying to teach a slow child when you're talking to me about math. For some reason, I don't know why. I seem to have some problems with those concepts. I'm not a dumb guy, but I just, you know, it's these dudes who can read like these huge books and that stuff. I marvel at those people. That's not something I can do, and I wish I could, because wow, you know, it'd be cool to get to the point where what's going on inside my head is cooler than what's going on outside my head, which is where a lot of these heavy math hair guys are at. More feedback. Dear Sean, you asked about PET scans, P-E-T scans. P-E-T, which I didn't know what it stood for, stands for positron emission tomography. PET scans measure the amount of activity in the human brain at a specific moment in time, showing a map of the brain and what areas are active. By differences, I was referring to the huge gap in neurotransmitters, misfires between neurons, and anomalous electrical activity. Also, medication, as you said, is a band-aid for the most part. This is where I'm talking about pharmafascism. Now, pharmafascism and medication are totally different. There are people out there who need to be medicated. There are people out there who have problems, okay, who are having chemical brain imbalance issues, who need help, okay? They are a small group, okay? They are really, really small, and everything else is over-medicated. So when I start talking about pharmafascism, you know, if your doctor is telling you you should be on pills, don't be throwing out the pills because you need them, okay? We're talking about these guys who are like, you know, I'm kind of bummed out today. Oh, here's some pills. You know, I want to take Viagra because I need to get a hard-on. You know what I mean? Like these commercials, it seems odd to me that they run commercials for drugs on the news when they're drugs that you can't buy. And I'm not a doctor, so why would I ask my doctor about them? My doctor should know about these drugs already. You'd think that he reads manuals and stuff. I don't need to see commercials about drugs. It's just me. It's just me, especially ones where they're, you know, oh, God. It makes me insane. The more, you know, social anxiety disorder and all this shit they just make up. It just blows me away. I wonder where the hell all this was like 50 years ago. Oh, it was still here, Sean. Oh, it was around. It was around. You know, we just, everybody drank. That's how we dealt with it. Yeah, I don't know, man. That whole thing sounds kind of fishy to me. Anyway, he goes on to say here, the goal of medication is to provide a buffer so that someone can ease into psychotherapy or cognitive therapies that involve working problems out. Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to get off that shit. That's sent in by Alien Binary. Thank you, Alien Binary. Always good to hear from you. He's, you know, and it's true, you got to get off the drugs, man. You got to get off the drugs. I mean, there's some scary stuff that happens to the brain. This is one of the few things, you know, a lot of guys are like, Sean, I thought you were, you know, we're only as good as our drugs and technology make us. Yes, this is true to a point, but, you know, when you're messing around with the brain, it's a dangerous, dangerous field to be screwing around with. You know, you got to be careful when you're messing around with your brain. It's one thing to be like reading, you know, you got some buffers there, so you could. But even like there are some books that'll put a really weird spin on your head, you know. And I'm not saying it's a good spin or a bad spin, but it is a spin. You know, you start reading. You know, if you were to, for example, let's say you were to pick up a kid, right, who doesn't know. You know, he's pretty impressionable. You know, he hasn't had any conflicting stuff. He gets a hold of a lot of like translated Nazi literature because those people had it sorted out when it came to propaganda. I mean, they knew what they were doing. And they did a study in this in a university in the States, and I haven't got a link for you for it. But they basically did translations, and they ran translations of Hitler's speeches through speakers for a group of students who were, you know, locked inside of a room for like a weekend. This was like a controlled environment. Bottom line, what happens is that these students who know who Hitler was wound up starting to buy into the white supremacist stuff. You know what I mean? And you're sitting there going, well, okay, but you wind up on a slippery slope there, don't you? Because is that a thought crime? Should that be made illegal? Should it have warning labels on it? I mean, I don't know. All I do know is that you got to be careful with the stuff that you put inside your head. Even when you're reading and stuff, you know, I mean, you'd be aware of it. You know, you should be aware of what you're reading and what you're researching, you know, so that, you know, in case things get a little weird. Those of you who don't read a lot, you probably won't know what I'm talking about. But for those of you who spend a lot of time inside your head, you know what I'm saying here. You know what I'm saying here. But I would say, honestly, I think that messing around with stuff that chemically alters your brain, I mean, because that's, you're chemically altering yourself, really. I mean, I'm starting to lean more and more towards a transhumanist kind of a thing, you know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to lean in that direction. Some people claim that I'm fairly utilitarian. You know, my buddy Mel there, she tells me that utilitarianism is stupid because you can't, you know, have a nap or read a book for fiction. I mean, it's you know, everybody goes to extremes. I'm not really big on labels anyway, but I like a lot of the ideas of utilitarianism. I like a lot of the ideas of transhumanism. I like some of the ideas of libertarianism. I think these are good ideas, but, you know, there's you got to draw a line somewhere. Because if you follow anything to the extremes, you start becoming an extremist and a radical in these fields, you know, you wind up building camps. Just about every political ideology winds up building camps. Utilitarians would do it. They'd be building camps to kill kids with Down syndrome. They'd be, you know, and the same with, like, libertarians. Eventually, you're going to need to build camps. And I'm not a big fan of camps. I don't like barbed wire and people inside the wire. You know, and it's funny because there's a lot of, like, Robert Heinlein. You know, I'm a big fan of Starship Troopers, that whole world that he outlined in there. Okay, but you read some of other Heinlein stuff, you know, Stranger in Strange Land, some of his free love stuff. I don't know. I don't know a lot about that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna refrain. It's okay for people to say, I don't know enough about that to really make a judgment call there. So we're going to reserve judgment on that till I got more data. So I don't know. But from what I'm seeing about the transhumanist thing, about, you know, the evolution of man and machine and the merge, well, not so much man and machine, because it could be argued that people, humans, are just meat bots. That's all we are. We're meat shields here on the planet, and you know, we're learning how to use other types of technology to augment and enhance ourselves. You know, I don't want to go cutting away any of the meat, because the meat's more advanced than the other tech. It'd be like downgrading if you were to insert stuff into your brain. But, you know, as this quantum computer thing, as we start doing stuff with light, as we start growing organic tissue and putting it on chips and stuff like that. Had dinner the other night. This is a neat story. Had dinner the other night with a guy who's pioneering the whole neural, like, freezing tissue. Okay? And he could freeze a chunk of tissue that's like about a centimeter by a couple millimeters by a couple millimeters without destroying the cells. And this is like kind of a holy grail sort of a thing because, you know, if we can actually freeze tissue, that's cryogenics. Right, because the problem with cryogenics is when you freeze a dude, all the cells rupture, and when you thaw him out, he's not goo, but his cells are all destroyed, and you can't bring him back to life. And this is a big issue with the cryogenics crowd. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff that's emerging, and they're talking about how they're growing organic stuff on chips, and man-machine interface, and, you know, growing neurons. Really neat stuff. Now's a neat time to be alive. That's for sure. But anyway, on to Sort Yourself Out. Dear Sean, Sort Yourself Out is the advice section of the show, where people, for some crazy reason, ask me for advice. I don't know why they do that, but, you know, some people seem to think I got something going on here. So I got an older brother. He's 23. He hasn't worked in 3 years since he got fired, and he has attended about a year in college classes. Other than that, he has sat around my dad's basement, now my mom's apartment, and played video games. Nobody in the family can get him motivated to go out and seriously look for a job. My sister suggested taking him to some sort of therapy. He's very smart, but for some reason, he's shy, depressed. We don't know why. Have you any suggestions? Yeah, my first suggestion is this is not your problem. That's my first suggestion right off the top. You've got an older brother. He's 23, and he's being a bum. Okay? He's hanging out. He ain't doing crap. Okay? Not your problem. Your brother's got to sort himself out. That's why the section of the show is called Sort Yourself Out, not Sort Your Brother Out. Now, I understand this is putting huge stress on you. I understand that, you know, you want your brother. You love your brother. You want to make sure he's going to be happy. La, 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 la. But buddy's in the comfort zone right now. As long as he's got a nice, safe basement to hang out in, he's not going to do nothing. Brother's got to get a little hungry before he's going to get out of his comfort zone. Okay, so stop coddling to the guy. Stop just condoning it. We'll focus on your own life. Read more. And, you know, kind of carry on in your own path. Don't get all hung up. I mean, if he's gonna screw his life up, it's his life to screw up. You just happen to be in the same family as him. You know what I mean? Like, family ties, they don't really carry a lot of blood for me. Like, blood ties, you know, they don't really mean a lot to me. I think that you can choose your family. I think you can choose people, and loyalty is a choice. You know what I mean? And so the blood thing, I get a lot of crap for that, especially from my wife. Holy cow. But honestly, you know, because she's had a really good family relationship. My family relationship, not so much growing up. Her family relationship, very, very strong. So there's a lot of advantages to a strong family. I've seen it. It's nice. It's good, you know. But you can just as easily have, you know, brothers and sisters who you adopt. And, you know, it's mutual, where there's no, you know, you have to look after me and I have to look after you. It's all like by choice. And then after that, it turns into loyalty and conviction, which, let me tell you, if you think conviction's rare in this day and age, you should try to find some loyalty, because I'll tell you, that stuff is like, oh, look, It's the Lost Ark of the Covenant, the Holy Grail, and a thimbleful of loyalty. Yeah, we can sell that loyalty on eBay. Yeah, which is kind of ironic. But anyway, you are hot shit. Thank you, SKTFM. And that is from Blood Dew. Good name. In Grand Rapids, Michigan, United States of America. How are things in Grand Rapids, Michigan? Why do I know Grand Rapids, Michigan? Why do I know that name so well? Oh, well, must be something going on there. So, yeah, bottom line, guys, if you got family members that are all, you know, messed up, they're pulling the soup sandwich and they just can't seem to get it together, just, you know, you got to step back and let these people do their own thing, but don't enable them. Don't enable them. Don't you know, help them do nothing by giving them a safe place to just hang out and do nothing all day. I'm not saying throw the dude on the street either, you know, but you got to give him a deadline. You got to be like, dude, guess what? 3 months, you're gone. And if he winds up on the street in 3 months, then guess what? He winds up on the street in 3 months. Let him cook out there for a month or two. And then when he comes back into the house, you know, you can reassess. You reassess. Set deadlines, back it up. All kinds of books on this stuff. Tough love and all that kind of jazz. I'm not a parental expert. I don't know much about it. But for you, my friend, your older brother has got his own problems. And you have got your problems. So you need to focus on yourself. Get yourself sorted out. And if your brother's looking for a suggestion, hell, throw him in the army. That'll be good. That'll get him out of the house anyway. You know, he's going to learn something. He's going to learn something. On to the news. A lot of people are really mad that I suggest people join the army. You know, a lot of people get really pissed off with me because I suggest individuals join the military. Help me out. I came from a bad, bad home life, man, and went into the army. And you know what? It wasn't fun. Wasn't a good time. But you know what? Sometimes limbs have to be removed. Sometimes if you've got, you know, bad mindset and you're just not, your software is not working, sometimes the process of reprogramming is a little bit painful. Some people would call me crazy. I know. It's not like I'm, you know, I got it all sorted out over here either. You know, I'm still working on it. Life is a process. But I would think that, you know, in order to, a bad move is better than no move sometimes, you know, which sounds kind of bizarre. You think, well, that's a bad move, meaning that, you know, he wouldn't enjoy the army, you know, and that would be the sort of stuff. But at least his movement, you know what I mean? Once he's moving, he can kind of figure out what direction he wants to go. Knowing what you don't want to do maybe is better than knowing what you want to do. That's another approach I take on stuff. But anyway, I digress. In pharmafascism news, we got some crazy news. Scientists have developed a cyber tooth to dispense medication for patients who have trouble remembering to take pills or are leery of getting injections. There may be new solutions for the future to solve their problems. The solution, however, may spark even more fear than the thought of missing a pill or getting an injection. Yes, according to Reuters, the European Union is putting its support behind the IntelliDrug Initiative. I'm not making this up. Which calls for a cybernetic device to be implanted into a patient's tooth to dispense medication. The cyber tooth would be fully programmable via software to give doctors and patients the ability to set the dosage that is to be administered. The device is going to be crucial, first of all, for patients who have disabilities in remembering, like Alzheimer's. You know, rather than having a nurse running up to them reminding them to take the pill, we have a device that'll do it automatically. It's auto magic. We decided to put the drug itself as sort of a protective matrix, so even if the device is swallowed, the drug will be released at a slow rate and not be dangerous to the patient. Isn't that some interesting stuff? The guy who did this, his name is Beskov, and some of his colleagues have already successfully tested it with pigs and are currently planning clinical trials of the device on humans. The device should be available on the market within the next 3 years. So it's not vaporware. They got one that they're using on the piggies. You know, don't you hate it when you have to choose to take your medication? You know, really, why should I have the pesky choice of choosing to take my medication? You know, because it's going to start with the Alzheimer's patients. And I guess, you know, I'm not being Luddite here. I'm not being a Luddite. I mean, there's definitely some positive uses for this thing. Alzheimer's patients, scary disease. Scary disease. Alzheimer's is a frightening disease. Looks a lot like mad cow disease, actually, in the effects of the brain. Some people can't tell them apart. Some people think that Alzheimer's is caused by red meat. There's some stuff there. So, you know, I could see that, you know, having prions turn your brain into sponge assisted with NutraSweet would tend to make one's, you know, kind of logic go a bit wobbly. So, you know, it's good to have extra teeth where you, I mean, this is a little dune for me. The tooth, remember the tooth. You know, I don't know. It's something. I'd want to follow this sort of trend, though. Anybody else finds out about implantable medication delivery devices, I'd like to know about that. That sounds kind of mind control-ish to me. And I guess it's not bad as long as it's medicine, right? Is that how it works? Oh, is this mind control? No, it's medicine. Oh, all right. All right. Because you're a heretic if you call down medicine, right? You're a heretic. So that's why they frame it. It's all about the framing. I love the dudes who are good with the spin. And in robotic takeover news, this was sent in by Destin. Thank you very much. Seattle doctors and scientists from the University of Washington in Seattle will get a glimpse of what it'll be like to do remote surgery in space when a portable medical robot they created will be tested next month in an underwater environment designed by NASA to simulate zero gravity. The portable robot, which can be controlled over the internet by a human surgeon many miles away, is being developed with money from the U.S. Department of Defense, used to treat wounded soldiers on a battlefield, to perform complicated surgeries on patients in remote areas of the developing world, and to help sick astronauts in space. Not the ones on the ground who go crazy and take hostages, the ones in space who don't go crazy, I guess. The difference between the robot surgeon demonstrated at the University of Washington on Wednesday and others being used today in American hospitals involves portability and communications. So this is interesting because, you know, I look at this and I say, yeah, that's cool. I mean, robots doing surgery, saving lives, right? Gotta like that. Nothing wrong with that. Very, very cool. But I would wonder, let's take that another step. Okay, so they implement this. We got robots doing surgery now. Okay, telepresence, granted. Granted, there's a human on the other end. You know, but realistically, how do these doctors do what they do? Let's look at it like a process. I mean, you can equate it to just about anything. Let's say you're doing a format and reinstall on a computer, you know, without getting all crazy into software and stuff like this. But there's a process in which you go through. You have to, you know, you have to clean everything. You have to put in this. You have to do it in a logical sequence of analysis. Now, let's say we're cutting a mole, something simple, like a surface operation where they're going to cut a mole out of your back. Okay, some little chunk of flesh they got to cut off. Away we go. Well, you don't really need a surgeon for that, do you? You just got to make sure you fit certain parameters. And this is where I'm wondering how long it's going to be before we start automating certain procedures. Because the machine, if it can see what's going on, it can recognize all the tissue, recognize what has to be removed, you'll have autonomous surgery happen. And this is where we start getting into the realms of the animatrix. Yes, I know. I'm basically a horror writer. I know. I take these concepts and I run with them, and I come up with the worst case scenario always. But if you know what the worst case scenario is, you should, you can try to avoid that stuff. That's the concept here. You know, that's why I do it. I'm not just, you know, paranoid. That's a added perk. I mean, I just get a little concerned about what they're doing with technology here. I think technology is fantastic, but I do think we need to be concerned with some of the ethics that get involved here because, well, as we all know, the business crowd's ethics aren't really what they could be. Could be a little bit better. Speaking of which, and if you doubt that, well, how about some bad blood news? Sent in again by Wyandi, thank you very much. British doctors used kids as guinea pigs by giving them blood, this children now, riddled with HIV and deadly hepatitis. And this is from England. The medics knew some of the donors were heroin-injecting prisoners in American jails. Remember I was talking about in South Carolina where they're knocking off time by trading in organs? You get 120 days off for a kidney and stuff. But they still tested their high-risk blood on young Brit hemophiliacs. Victims were aged from just 3 months to 15 years old. Pardon me while we check you out without giving you a chance. The truth emerged as Lord Archer of Sandwell opened a public inquiry in London into the scandal. Yesterday, one health expert likened the child victims to canaries sent down into the mines. Most hemophiliacs were not told they had HIV or hepatitis for several years. We'll just keep it quiet. Others only found out by reading their medical notes. A delay meant some adult hemophiliacs infected their wives or girlfriends with HIV. So we're killing the whole family. Come get an injection. We'll wipe out the entire family name. Sounds like a plan, hey? Let's infect the kids. Let's infect everybody. What the hell? U.S. prisoners were paid for their blood to buy food or cigarettes. Let me read that again. U.S. prisoners were paid for their blood to buy food or cigarettes. So give us blood. We'll give you food and cigarettes, which is funny that I'm not too sure people who smoke should be giving blood. But anyway, the blood was used to make a clotting agent factor VIII to treat hemophiliacs whose blood does not clot. In the late 70s, early 80s, almost 5,000 hemophiliacs were infected. At least 9 kids were given infected blood. Oh, gee, you know, in a utilitarian society where people were basically Nazis, like during the Nazi regime, they would take people who they thought had genetic defects and they would kill them, or they would, they would kill them in the death camps, but they would also castrate them so they couldn't have kids. You know, this was very, very common. As a matter of fact, the Nazis were one of the last people to adopt that. Americans were doing it for years and years and years. Everybody thought, you know, this whole, you know, sterilization was, sterilization was a really great idea so that, you know, people with less on the go would be, you know, removed from the gene pool. Get out of my gene pool. Well, now, of course, it seems kind of funny to me that, you know, they wipe out these 5,000 hemophiliacs. So I would wonder, you know, is that really an accident? Is it? I don't know. You know, it seems I would fit with some previous doctrine. You know, if you were a sinister kind of guy, you'd wonder why they're killing these people. There is no way of testing for HIV or Hep C at the time. Well, that's not entirely true, because HIV was actually it's listed in a biological weapons manual published in the 60s. So we knew all about HIV. And you should go check the World Health immunization map and then the HIV outbreak map, and you'll see that they overlay pretty well back when, HIV kind of hooked up. And I still love that story about the airline steward. You remember that one with AIDS? You know, the airline steward who tactically and technically had sex with monkeys and then he got a virgin HIV from that. Do you remember that story? Because that was where it all came from, right? This is what they were saying back in the day. They had the FUD going on and they were saying, oh yeah, this airline steward, he got bit by a monkey or he had sex by a monkey. Originally he was bit by a monkey, and then they realized the HIV that monkeys have is not the same even strain of disease that humans get. But anyway, this was what they were originally telling us. They said it was, there was an airline steward and he had sex with a monkey, and then this guy was like man whore extraordinaire, and he, you know, had sex with people all over, you know, America and these tactical locations, and it's just spread and spread and spread. And it just happens to be a disease which is extremely sensitive to be spread in the gay populace. If you live a white Christian upper class lifestyle, you're pretty much not going to get the disease, which is why there's all these, you know, morons walking around saying thank God it's for AIDS and stuff like this. You know, it's a pretty handy disease to clean out the unwashed and the unwanted. You know, we can wipe the ghettos out. You know, that'd be handy for certain people in power, I guess. I think it's sick, demented, and weird. And I'd like to believe that that's not true. I'd like to believe that it's not true. But when people in Britain are injecting children with blood they know they get from the highest risk donor, you'd wonder, you know, that goes beyond negligence. And you start looking at, why did you do that? Why did you do that? I mean, everybody's seen, scientists are kind of funny crap. Everybody's seen the documentaries where the scientists, you know, are like, wow, you know, the great white sharks are feeding on the whale carcass. I'm going to go sit on the whale carcass with no diving equipment on at all. While 40-foot, you know, 30-foot great white sharks, you know, mow down on this thing. Hey, that's great. You know, scientists sometimes are not really, somebody needs to smack some of these guys in the head. You know, they do really dumb things sometimes. And you look at them and you go, what are you doing, you know? But I don't think that that's part of it. I think that was actually, you know, that goes beyond negligence. Sorry. That's, somebody should go to jail. Somebody should be going to jail and singing me one hell of a song about what's going on with that. Because that, not to get all Alex Jones on you here. Not to get all Alex Jones, but, the man's got a point. You know, I mean, what if he's right? In Decker News, sent in by Arbitrator. Thank you very much, Arbitrator. A U.S. Navy malware infection risked a submarine prank. Now, this is interesting. This, an American contractor now, holding a top-level security clearance. Top level. So he's not in the Army, but he may as well be, and he's got, like, you know, above top secret clearance, okay? Has been convicted of sabotaging. Convicted of sabotaging critical U.S. Navy computers used for submarine traffic control. Now, submarines are one of those kind of things that if that machine messes up, people die. There is no middle ground here. It's not like the jet doesn't take off and everyone wonders what's going on, or they're flying and the navigation computer's got a glitch in it. No, this is submarines, okay? Being a submariner is quite the gig. Every single guy on board the boat's got to know what every single pipe and wire does. It's a hell of a deal to be a submariner. And to be messing around with the software, like, wow. Richard S. Sylvester from the Massachusetts installed malware on a computer networked with the Italian HQ of the U.S. 6th Fleet, America's standing force in the Mediterranean, in theater. They're operational. He later told investigators that he was upset after his company, Ares Systems, which he owned, which he then owned, had failed to win an important naval business. So let me get this right. We didn't give you the contract, so you start messing with the data that we use to control submarines. How do you spell treason? Like, wow, if there was ever something that would probably get a dude a death penalty, this is pretty good. You know, this is, that seems pretty terrorist. If we can't trust people with top security clearance, where are we? Lamented District Judge Rebecca Smith when sentencing Sylvester. Perhaps ironically, the hearing took place earlier this month at Norfolk, Virginia, one of the biggest U.S. Navy bases. So you gotta wonder, you know, my God, this guy must have been shot, right? The computer network in question was used to track and record the actual planned movements of the U.S. and Allied submarines. A nuclear submarine proceeding at high speed underwater has very little ability to avoid collisions, and its sonar is typically blinded from the flow of water over its hull. Thus, it's normal practice for submarines to deconflict their journeys using a traffic control system in which details of planned movements are stored. Okay? It was a system of this type that Sylvester attacked. So it's like I took my submarine air traffic control and screwed with it in an operational environment. Like, wow, you're going to hell. You know, like, boy, oh boy, I think we should just give him to the Navy and we'll send him off to, you know, some SEAL buds training and they can deal with him. After being nabbed by naval investigators, Sylvester folded easily and pleaded guilty to a single count of damaging protected computers. It could have got him as much as 10 years. That's it. 10 years in a federal pen. But his attorney submitted a wide range of mitigating testimony. This is after he admits this. Sylvester paid $25,000 U.S. towards repairs. And a psychiatrist said he was suffering from depression and he's crazy and blah, blah, blah. Okay. What did he get? What did he get? Okay, he paid the Navy 25 grand, which is nothing. Okay, that's a beer fart. I'm in debt further than 25 grand. Whatever. Okay. Sylvester was sentenced to 12 to 18 months. Months! In a federal prison and fined 10 grand on a Navy base. On a Navy base. Now, we're talking about Gary McKinnon in England, okay, who apparently just hacked in looking for some information on UFOs, is facing up to 70 years in jail, and he's worried about going to Guantanamo Bay. Okay? And he's poking around looking for UFOs on non-mission critical equipment, and this guy here is messing with submarines that are active in theater in the Mediterranean, and he gets a year and a half, pays 10 grand, and walks? How is that possible? I mean, you think, you know, you're expecting the punchline, right? Guy messes with the computers, he's going to get shot, right? Active service, like people at war using the equipment they need as air traffic control underwater to use multi-billion dollar equipment, threatening the lives of literally thousands of Americans, and he gets nothing. He gets a slap on the wrist. Like, wow, I don't know who your lawyer is, pal, but, you know, I guarantee he made more than 35 grand off of this deal. I mean, if not, you should be tipping him huge. That's obviously, you know, and this is exactly the kind of stuff that Jello Biafra talks about in his spoken word album. You know, if you ever picked up any of Jello's spoken word stuff from Alternative Tentacles, do that now. And what they're doing is they're sending a cost-effective approach. This guy here actually does the damage. This guy here actually puts lives in danger. He gets a year and a half and 10K. And this dude is poking around looking for UFO stuff, gets threatened with 7 years in jail, and he's going to be sent to Guantanamo Bay. What's going on? That doesn't add up, boys. That doesn't add up. Something's wrong there. Something is wrong there. On a more light note, in space news, sent in by EPEX, thank you very much, an Earth-like planet spotted outside our solar system is the first found that could support liquid water and harbor life. Like, this is huge. Scientists announced this a couple days ago. Liquid water is a key ingredient for life as we know it. The newfound planet is located at the Goldilocks distance, not too close, not too far from a star, to keep water on its surface from freezing or vaporizing. And while astronomers are not able to look for signs of biology on the planet, the discovery is a milestone in a planet detection in the search for extraterrestrial life, with one potentially to profoundly change our outlook on the universe. The goal is to find life on a planet like Earth around a star like the Sun. This is a step in that direction, says study leader Stefan Erdi of the Geneva Observatory in Switzerland. Each time you go one step forward, you are very happy. The new planet is about 50% bigger than Earth, about five times more massive. So I guess if it's more massive, that would mean to be higher gravity, right? Which means that if it's higher gravity, it'd probably be smaller creatures, you know, maybe thin, or I don't know how that works. I shouldn't speculate. The new Super Earth is called Gliese, G-L-I-E-S-E, 581C. What a catchy title. After its star, Gliese 581. You know, they should really hire me to digitally baptize planets. The diminutive red dwarf star, located 20.5 light years away, is about one-third as massive as the Sun. Gliese 51C is the smallest extrasolar planet or exoplanet discovered to date. It's located about 15 times closer to the star than the Earth is to the Sun. 1 year on the planet is equal to 13 days on Earth. Wow, they're humming like chainsaws over there. Because red dwarfs, also known as M-dwarfs, are about 50 times dimmer than the Sun and much cooler, the planets can orbit closer to them while still remaining in their habitable zones. The spherical region around the star, which the planet's temperature can sustain liquid water on its surface. You know, it'd be neat to get a... We need to imagine what the sunrise would look like there, because the Sun would be enormous, right? Because you're a lot closer. You know, it's... You gotta wonder about stuff like that. And they're saying that it goes on and talks about water, talks about the possibilities there. That's exciting, but did you know about that? If you're cruising around online, you might, but I bet, you know, CNN's not talking about that. No. Planet with possible water and life. You know, hey, does anybody care? No, not really. All right. In mind control news, also sent in by Wyondi, who really needs to do something else with his free time. Overweight and obese children. Now, here's a news story you're never going to hear. Okay, you're never going to hear this. I got the link. It's a legit story. And it's a research done at the Liverpool University, okay, with 60 kids. So it's a pretty good study. Overweight and obese children increase the amount of food they eat by more than 130% after watching food advertising on TV, a study revealed yesterday. So if they watch the commercials, they eat the food. Researchers at Liverpool University showed a group of 60 children at a cartoon along with TV adverts for either food or toys. The youngster was then offered a selection of low-fat savory snacks, crisps, grapes, chocolate, jelly sweets. The team found calorie intake was higher with the group that watched the food adverts compared to the toys group. The children who were already obese increased their food consumption by 134% compared to those who just watched the toy adverts. Overweight children upped their intake by 101%, and the normal weight children by 84%. Now, this should kind of fall into the no-duh category. Because, you know, the marketing guys, that's what they do. They are literally doing brain scans on people to try to find what shades and colors of hues and flicker frame rates and subliminal they can use to increase desire. They're measuring the increase in desire in, like, the tiniest little hairs. You know, and they're looking for the next big killer app that's going to just make people, you know, we'll show you this and, you know, we just control you. Dr. Jason Halford, director of the University of Kissel Human University's Kislev Human Ingestive Behavior Laboratory, said, "Our research confirms food TV advertising has a profound effect on all children's eating habits. The study also suggested a connection between weight and susceptibility to overeat when exposed to adverts on TV." This is like, that's all, and that was it. I just read you the entire article. You're not going to read anything else about that because, of course, nobody wants to, you know, ever say that advertising's bad for you. Advertising's everywhere. That's how people make money, right? That's how people make money on the web. Who cares if it's, you know, killing our kids? Does that matter? No. Shut up and eat more. And when you get too fat, don't worry. We got you covered here in the core political new age. You betcha. In the big box healthcare news. Oh, yeah. Walmart said on Tuesday that it will contract with local hospitals. I am not making this up. And other organizations to open as many as 400 in-store health clinics in the next 2 to 3 years. People who sell Walmart health clinics. Like, my nose is bleeding. I swear to God. Should current market forces continue, the world's largest retailer set up to 2,000 clinics could be Walmart stores over the next 5 to 7 years. Walmart said the effort marks an expansion of a pilot program started in 2005 when it leased space to stores to medical clinics. Currently, it said 76 clinics are operating inside Walmart stores in 12 states. Holy crap. Like, holy crap twice. You know what I'm saying here? Like, this is out of control. It said the clinics are expected to boost health of its shoppers and should also help sales by drawing consumers into the stores. We think the clinics will be a great opportunity for our business. Okay, medicine and business should not go together. You know, church and state, medicine and business, I like to keep those things separate. But most importantly, they're going to provide something to our customers and communities desperately need. Affordable access at the local levels of quality health care, said the Walmart chief executive officer Lee Scott in a statement that I guarantee he did not write. He's got monkeys that do spin 24/7 who angled that one. Like, nice framing job. Walmart has endured criticism. Endured it. Yeah, they endured it. Most powerful. They're like China's third largest trading partner or something like that. And they're enduring criticism. Oh, gosh. Not criticism. But they've endured it. Like, nobly. You know, the little happy face there. Over the years, from labor unions that say it's pay, that says it pays inadequate wages and pushes employees into government aid programs. That's what they say. You know, it's not like they actually do that. Does Walmart play inadequate wages? I think it does, actually. And if you cross that with some of the corporate cult stuff that's going on, great book called Corporate Cults. You should check it out. Some of the mind control stuff that these guys do is really freaks me out, man. And if that's not enough, I'm really hitting you with the good stories today. In fixed election news, one of the more controversial of America's exports has managed to unite factions from across France's political spectrum. What am I talking about? With the major parties in France hotly contesting a presidential election, uniting to inform AFP that a catastrophe has taken place. No, I'm not talking about an opening of a new McDonald's. The catastrophe in question is an electronic voting catastrophe of the kind that occurred in a number of countries in America during the past November's midterm elections. This is in France now. And a few of the French cities that used the new electronic machines, the problems encountered were typical of what we've seen here in the U.S. Malfunctions and complications that resulted in long lines at the polls, and ultimately, voters who had to leave without voting. Kind of not so good. The technical glitches were compounded by some of the issues that appeared to be specific to France. I'm talking about the elderly French's confusion and general distrust of the machines, which I don't know why they do that. The machines gave us George Bush. What could they possibly not like about that? In contrast, the American elderly were among the groups that studies showed were the most pleased with the touchscreen voting in November midterms due to its ease of use. I've not met a lot of elderly American, North American people who are all about automated voting machines. I would question the findings of that particular, study. I suppose that senior citizens in America may place more trust in their computers than their counterparts in France, a trait that appears to be decidedly a mixed blessing. Well, you know, the guys in France, they recently had, fairly recently had a bunch of Nazis kick over their city. So, they're probably a little bit sketchy about stuff that they look at and they go, I wonder if this in some way could be used to bring people over here who want to put us in camps. You know, I wonder if that's possible. So, a lot of people rip on the French, blah, blah, blah. I was in France. I went to Paris. They're the nicest people I ever talked to, man. Well, they're not the nicest. Well, they were as nice as Americans. You know, Americans were nice, man. When I was down in New York, those people were nice. Unbelievably nice. Way nicer than I thought they'd be. I mean, when I went to France, getting around, trying to do the best I can, don't speak a lick of French. Can't speak that language to save my life. Swear to God, it's bad. And people were really cool. So, I don't know. I don't know, man. I think that maybe electronic voting is a little bit easy to manipulate. Maybe I know a little bit too much about hacking and stuff. But, I just don't like it. Don't like it. And I know there's a lot of people out there that, would use stronger language than don't like it. But, I kind of put that in the bad category for now. We want to wait for that to get through a couple of incarnations. I'm not saying we shouldn't use electronic voting, but I think we should have some people like from Cult of Dead Cow design fail safes for it, and everything's open source and we can watch it live and everything's accountable. Today's daily hack comes from a listener here. It says, I just heard your show on 2304.07, and you recently tried Ubuntu Linux, and you're thinking about moving it from Windows as a find a good program to help me with Newsreel. I got a billion of these emails. Well, I've got a website that gives you a good list, along with a search engine, of compatible programs for various distributions of Linux. I'm just starting with Kubuntu Linux myself, and that site seems to be of good use to me. And this is the site is Linux App Finder. I didn't know about it. Maybe you knew about it. Maybe it's kind of a no-brainer, but I thought it was pretty cool. So, you know, if you're thinking about it like I am, you should check this out. A lot of interesting stuff there. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. And if you care and you cannot donate, then please distribute. Give this program to somebody who, you know, burn it to disc, give it out to people, give it to folks at truck stops, give it to people who need to stay awake, give it to people who are bored, give it to people riding trains, give it to the Pope, give it to family members, give it to the PETA guys, give it to the Jehovah's Witnesses when they show up at the door. But if you can donate, please do so by going to Rant Media, click on the Donate tab in the top right hot link, or send a cleverly disguised envelope, or something inside the envelope cleverly disguised, to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, in Delta, British Columbia, Canada, B4M2M4. And no digital baptisms today. That's where I, you know, get people online names if they want. But I do want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for all of their assistance. And if you have information or anything you want to get to me, you can reach Sean Kennedy at Newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. I may not answer you. Chances are I will not answer you, but I do read all the email that comes in, unless you start ripping on me, in which case I delete you pretty quick. And don't send me three or four pages. If I have to scroll down twice in your email, you can bank I'm not going to read it, just because I've got such volume dealing with. Not trying to be a jerk here, just the truth. If you like the music in the background, check out Rob Dugan's album, Furious Angel. Super cool double album. Very, very cool. And I'm going to fade out now with a track from Dan Lesac versus Scoobius Pip called Thou Shalt Always Kill. And remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.
Thou shalt not steal if there is a direct victim. Thou shalt not worship pop idols or follow lost prophets. Thou shalt not take the names of Johnny Cash, Joe Strummer, Johnny Hartman, Desmond Decker, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, or Sid Barrett in vain. Thou shalt not think any male over the age of 30 that plays with a child that is not their own is a paedophile. Some people are just nice. Thou shalt not read NME. Thou shalt not stop liking a band just because they've become popular. Thou shalt not question Stephen Fry. Thou shalt not judge a book by its cover. Thou shalt not judge Lethal Weapon by Danny Glover. Thou shalt not buy Coca-Cola products. Thou shalt not buy Nestle products. Thou shalt not go into the woods with your boyfriend's best friend, take drugs and cheat on him. Thou shalt not fall in love so easily. Thou shalt not use poetry, art or music to get into girls' pants. Use it to get into their heads. Thou shalt not watch Hollyoaks. Thou shalt not attend an open mic and leave as soon as you've done your shitty little poem or song you self-righteous. Thou shalt not return to the same club or bar, week in, week out, just because you once saw a girl there that you fancied that you're never going to talk to. Thou shalt not put musicians and recording artists on ridiculous pedestals, no matter how great they are or were. The Beatles were just a band. Led Zeppelin, just a band. The Beach Boys, just a band. The Sex Pistols, just a band. The Clash, just a band. Crass, just a band. Minor Threat, just a band. The Cure were just a band. The Smiths, just a band. Nirvana, just a band. The Pixies, just a band. Oasis, just a band. Radiohead are just a band. Block Party, just a band. The Arctic Monkeys, just a band. The next big thing, just a band. Thou shalt give equal worth to tragedies that occur in non-English speaking countries as to those that occur in English speaking countries. Thou shalt remember that guns, bitches and bling were never part of the four elements and never will be. Thou shalt not make repetitive generic music. Thou shalt not make repetitive generic music. Thou shalt not make repetitive. and thou shalt always, thou shalt always kill.